You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution. To get more in-depth analysis and commentary from our scholars, subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast on iTunes, download on Stitcher, or find on our website at brookings.edu/BCP.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all for coming. It's a pleasure to welcome you to our program this morning, Understanding the Party System After Taiwan's 2016 Election. I'm Richard Bush, the director of the Center for East Asia Policy Studies here at Brookings. And our speaker today is our good friend Yeo Ching-shin, who is a visiting fellow here this fall, and we've been very pleased to have him as a colleague. His normal position when he's not here is as a distinguished research fellow at the Election Studies Center of National Zhengzhou University in Taiwan. By way of a very brief introduction, politics in Taiwan has been an important factor, not the only factor by any means, in Taiwan's relations with China, Taiwan's relations with the United States, and in whether we have peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait, and it's there's been an interesting evolution in how Taiwan politics has affected that, which leads to the question, what's the significance this year of the 2016 presidential and legislative elections in Taiwan? Is it just reflect a normal sort of change in sentiment among the Taiwan public that will shift back in a different direction, or is something more important going on? We couldn't have a better person than Yeo Ching-shin to explain that to us. So without further ado, Ching-shin, do you want to go ahead and make your presentation?
Okay. Thank you, Richard, for your kind introduction. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ching-shin Yeo from Taiwan. So you could be fine that this morning could be a little bit different. I'm more focused on Taiwan's politics inside. Now from the perspective from the triangle between Taiwan, U.S. and China. Thank you for your coming this early morning. And I know it's cold outside and changed quickly today and also this week, more like a relation between Taiwan right now. So thank you very much. And before I kick off my presentation, I would like to take this opportunity to express my gratitude to the people in CPAE and also the people in Brookings. Actually, I enjoy quite a lot and I learned quite a lot in the past half year here. So in this presentation, I would say that try to say something about the impact of the election, the 2016 election, and try to dig a little bit inside from the campaign process to see how the DPP won the election and or on the other way, why the KMT lose the election. So, and try to elaborate some impacts from that on to say that, well, what will be the challenge for the new government in Taiwan and also why it has some challenge there, okay? That's what I'm going to do here. Okay, this is a very important issue for myself because whenever I have a speech outside, I always try to say that why should we have to talk about Taiwan? Okay, and it's easy. It's a democracy, and it's democracy for Chinese. I don't deny that personally I'm from China, and we are ancestors from mainland China too. We are Chinese society, but we are Chinese democratic society, the only one. Well, maybe someone from Singapore might have a different idea, but as a political scientist, I would say that, well, we are democracy in Taiwan. I should say that, well, this democracy comes not easy because we fight, and we have some causes in the past half century. So this is a very valuable one. And the second is we are close to China because we have some, well, very fundamental dispute between the two sides. We are not culturally, but politically. That means the choice for the future. So it's a very different from two sides. And this difference could also provide a very good textbook for the IR people, for the, cross-relation people, and also in company politics too, okay? And also, this is my favorite here. It's a good scenery. Do you know that that's a small island in Pacific, but we have a mountain more than 300, whose height is more than 30,000 kilometers. So that's you have a snow in the mountain, but you have a beach on the Pacific area, and such and such, and food. You got to visit that. You got to visit there. So, and also people. And here is the topic, the election 2016. This is the third turnover of political power in Taiwan, and which is quite unique, because if you try to say something from a textbook, that, well, how do you define a good democracy, particularly from a new democracy, the survey of democracy, then, well, the yardstick should be, the, well, according to the most popular one, the two turnover of political powers by Huntington. But we now engage into the third one. That means we are moving toward a new phase of democratic consolidation in Taiwan, which we have a very, very regular rotation of party politics in Taiwan. And also, this election is a good opportunity to examine the new relation between Taiwan and China, because we have a totally different political party in power, different from the previous one, the KMT one, which is DPP. And these two parties, they differ themselves from the China issue. So that's a good opportunity to examine. And my presentation today will just be focused on, well, what happened in the campaign process and what are the outcomes there, and try to say that how can we define or how can we evaluate the 2016 election and its impact going follow on. Okay, and this is the purpose here. Actually, I try to address three questions here, how to interpret the election. And the second one is to, well, try to say the new party system, the social base, that means who support which party and what are they support for. And also try to assessment the new policy income for this new party system in Taiwan. Okay, this is very background information for this one. In the year of 2008, which the KMT won a landslide election under Ma Ying-jeou, you can see that, well, there is the green dark, the deep green in the south, and the whole island is a very deep blue one. That means in 2008, the KMT won a landslide against the DPP. And so that could be bring you different issues. Say that, well, since the 2008, the KMT has such a strong advantage, how could the KMT collapse so fast? Okay, and this is 2012, which the KMT continued to win the election, but you can see the color is changing already. In Taiwan, we put the blue as the KMT and put the green as the DPP. And you can see 2008 and also 2012. And then come to the new one. It's totally green. And more important is that, well, you can see that in this 2008, in the central area, that could be this area. That is a competitive area in Taiwan. That means the green and deep, the green and blue, they combat against each other in central Taiwan. And the KMT continued to hold on the north, the DPP in the south. And in 2012, you can see a little bit, well, the color is changing. And then 2016. And you can see that if you compare 2016 and 2008, well, lots of similarity. That means the DPP has tremendously over the KMT, just like the case in 2008. So it also brings you different question about, well, how long can the DPP hold on given its advantage right now? That also means that in Taiwan, party power change quickly. Okay, that's lots of issue here. And we try to find some, this is my purpose here, try to find some theory to interpret the election in 2016. And how do we decode, well, the underlying meaning of this election. And actually, as a political scientist in Taiwan, also, actually, I was educated in the U.S., in Taiwan, say that, well, we got to have some theory to interpret the development right now. And the only good theory, or the most popular theory, should be that from Will Key's idea about critical election. That means, well, if we try to say an election which will bring some, well, different pattern of alliance between party and the voter, then critical election is a key concept to be used. And if we try to dig out some idea from Will Key's idea, says that, well, he says that if you try to say a critical election for 2016, there are some criteria. And the first one should be that, well, should be the turnover of political power, that's for sure. And the other is that, well, there is a higher involvement by voters. That means people must participate overly, not only some one particular sector, but not the other. So that could be the other criteria. And the third one is that, well, that kind of change should persist for quite a bit long time. That is a very hard criteria for Taiwan, because we try to check from the early 1996, when we our first presidential election in 96. Actually, the KMT in power from 96 to 2000. Then the DPP from 2000 to 2008. Then the KMT again, 2008 to 12 to 16. Then comes the DPP. That means we just change repeatedly of the power of political party in Taiwan. So actually, some people in Taiwan or also in academia too say that, well, could we define 2016 as a critical election? Maybe not, because we got to wait a little bit more time to see that how can DPP survive. And that's my, well, starting point of my research here is that, well, how can the DPP survive after the election? Okay. And this is the partisan support in 2016. You can see that a very interesting phenomenon in the past 2 decades that, well, not only the KMT and the DPP just replaced each other in elections, but also you can see that in 2000 election, that means the KMT first lose their presidential election in Taiwan, it was due to the internal split. And in the year of 2004, it's a very close election, and that means only 0.2% of difference of popular support in that election. Very, very close. And also that election was, well, before the election day, there was a gun shooting incident in that time, but the DPP continued to win the election. So it was not easy to determine which party dominates in these elections here. And then 2008, when Ma Ying-jeou was the KMT chairman, he won the election by a landslide. It should be more than 58% of the popular vote, the highest one in Taiwan in the presidential election. But in 2012, a little bit decreased, and then in 2016. So, well, one phenomenon for this trend is that, well, the KMT might lose its power only when internal split before 2016. But the case in 2016 is different. The KMT lose power straight, not any internal issues. They just lost the election. That means the DPP went over from outside, no problem at all. So the DPP win the election without any internal split from the inside, the KMT. That means, well, the two party, at least the DPP has become more and more strong and more stable in Taiwan. That is the, well, the stronger party right now. And the turnout rate, actually, it has been high over the past decade. More than 83% to 66%, and it's decreasing. But it's good to decrease a little bit, because sometimes we are too sentimental in presidential election and the people just get high and in Taiwan. And well, in the 2016 election, not a case the obligation in the US this year. The result is pretty much predictable. Yeah, because before the election of 2016, everybody knows that, well, the DPP is going to win. And the problem is that how the margin will be. But in the case that we do see that Taiwan is a country without using compulsory voting regulations. So this high turnout rate is rare in democracy. And it's good that we have a little bit decrease. But maybe 60% or more than 65% is quite regular maybe in the future. But in the past, we are quite happy to have a very high turnout rate here. And the previous discussion is more focused on the macro one. That means the macro electoral data. And that could show you some idea about how partisan the picture of political party in Taiwan. And then come to the different scenarios, or macro one. Macro one means what the individual's party attachment. That means how individual citizens support a political party. And the picture here is from the mid-90s, from 94 to the 2016 here. And you can see that, well, the whole picture in the past decades shows that, well, a decrease, but still in a relative majority, is independence, while the partisan neutrals. Here we define independence. Does that mean that they don't vote? They just say that they don't attach to any particular party in Taiwan. Well, it's understandable to say that, well, in Taiwan, people, they don't like political party. Historically, there are some story there that, well, only one KMT as a ruling party in the authoritarian period. Political party is horrible. It that means, well, politics is dirty. Well, when I was a child, my parents told me that don't step in politics. But I was mistakenly to, well, register in political science department, so whatever. Anyway, when I was told in the, before that, well, we don't participate in politics because we have the white terror experience, we have authoritarian experience at that time. So don't get involved. So you can imagine that in early period that the data only show after 94. But if we try to dig out some more earlier data, that we will say that people are rather, rather distant from themselves, from political party. But by saying they have a no party label, that doesn't mean that they don't participate. Actually, they participate. That's the reason that we have a real high turnout rate here. Okay, you can see that the relative majority will be the partisan neutral. And these people, actually, I should say that there are two categories. The first one, they are less educated, and they don't participate. They are apolitics. They even anti-politics. But they participate because they are mobilized, more than by the politician, more than by their friendship, such and such. So they participate. And these people in Taiwan, those low-educated and lived in the rural area, these people, well, around 10 to 15%. And the other half of the individual of independence, they are highly educated. They are rather relatively informed. But they don't carry on any party label. They just participate. And they criticize politics. And these people, they always try to participate in election. And these people, they might, well, quite autonomously, DPP supporter or anti-KMT supporters during authoritarian period. Okay, so you can see that the period of the, percentage of the independents, they are relatively high in past. And then we have the KMT, then in 86, we have DPP. So after 86, well, the party level becomes that kind of taboo again. So it becomes more and more popular and quite a usual one. And you can see that the DPP is a green one, and the KMT is a blue one. So the DPP is in an increased trend, and the KMT is, a little bit up and down, and right now is a decreasing trend. And I think the critical point for the KMT is around the, the second half of the 2012. That means the second term of the Ma Ying-jeou's presidency, when at that time the KMT decreased and far behind the DPP. And that's a historical one for the DPP to election at the time. So, and the other minor parties, actually, we do have other minor parties, such as the PLP and also the New Party and also the TSU, Taiwan Solidarity Union. And these parties, they matter around the mid-2000. But after the mid-2000, well, they just decrease. They decrease because we change our electoral system for the legislators. So they are not able to succeed as they did before in state elections. So far you can see that after 2008, basically it's a two-party system in Taiwan. And you can imagine that if we didn't change the party system, if we didn't change the electoral system or the political structure will continue to be a two-party competition in that one. And one other reminding is that, well, this one, this one is the New Power Party, which emerged in 2016 election. And this one is a new one, and we deserve that a little bit for a discussion later on this one. Okay, this is the macro one. And the social base, and this is come from a data set from the 2016 post-election survey by the Taiwan's Election and the Democratization Study, TDS 2016. And you can see that, well, my analysis for this social base at KMT, who support for the KMT? Well, the college educated. Here, well, in the education level, there is a primary school and below, junior high, senior high, college, university, and a graduate above. So you can see that the KMT is around, well, high educated, but not the highest educated people. There's college people there. And the civil servant, that's for sure. And this is the KMT stronghold over the past half century. And Chinese identity, and also the pro-immigration people. By contrast, you can see the DPP one. You can say, well, young generation. Here, it depends on your definition of young generation. When I finished my graduate student here back to Taiwan, I was young, but no more. So I'm outside this category. But for these people who below 40 years old, they prefer to support the DPP. And also for the low-educated, and I should say that these low educated, they are basically mobilized to elect. Yeah. And I should say, maybe before 2000, these low educated, they are power base for the KMT. That means they switch around the year 2000. Okay? And then high educated, and also professionals, laborers, farmers, students, and also in the central area and the south area, and the times and pro independence. So you can see that. The last two categories about identity issue is more lifelong period issues. That means they carry on these feelings and sentiment quite a long time, so it's not easy to change. And this is factor that after my analysis that, well, I try to figure out what are the important factors in Taiwan. And in the 2006 election, you can see that, well, the first one is incumbent's performance. That means Ma Ying-jeou's performance matter, and it matter adversely to the KMT. That means people are not satisfied with Ma Ying-jeou's performance over the past 8 years. Maybe because according to our questionnaire, we asked, how do you feel about, do you satisfy with Ma Ying-jeou's performance in 8 years, as a president in 8 years, and actually very poor. Yeah, maybe, you have some information about the opinion poll during the period that is only down to 9% of popularity vote or approval voting. 9%. It's very low. So you are not able to imagine, well, a 9% president compared to, well, 70 or 80 popularity in 2008. So that's only 8 years. That decreased sharply. So people, they don't like Ma Ying-jeou during that period. And also, candidate likeness. That means the candidate in 2016 should be the Tsai Ing-wen from the DPP and the Eric Chu, Zhu Lilun from the KMT. Actually, people, they don't like Zhu Lilun. Well, they like Tsai Ing-wen even more, far more than Zhu Lilun. So this factor, it continue to influence people's mind in the election. And the other third issue, identification and the preference on independence and immigration issue, and the social identity and the self-identity also matter in the election. That means people who identify the KMT, well, likely to support the KMT. That's for sure, it's a matter of course. And the people who prefer the DPP, I didn't know it's DPP, they will vote for Tsai Ing-wen. And people who prefer to take a stand on unification, they vote for Zhu Lilun, the KMT, and pro-independence, vote for the Zhu Lilun, Tsai Ing-wen of the DPP. And also, self-identity people who identify themselves Taiwanese, which is very high percentage, vote for the Tsai Ing-wen. And people who identify themselves as Chinese or dual identity, they are likely to vote for the Zhu Lilun. So I should say that the last three categories. That means party ID and also unification issue and self-identity issue. They are quite conventional wisdom in Taiwan's electoral studies. They say that, well, these three fundamental cleavage try to depart from party difference. You can tell difference between these categories. And the first two, incumbent's performance and also the candidate likeness, is quite short-term period factor. And these two factors, well, matter in the 2016 election. Okay. And you can see that there are also some story behind this candidate likeness, because the KMT, they have a difficulty to produce a good candidate in the beginning, and they switch different candidates down to the end of election. So that also caused some problem for the KMT. And this is the campaign issue in Taiwan. Very interesting one is that, well, I try to compare 2016 and 2012. 2016 is the year that the KMT continued to win the election, and 2016, no. You try to compare these two elections to see that, well, what are the negative and positive in terms of issue politics in Taiwan? You can see that economy, cross trade, social welfare continue to be the most important issues. If you ask people that, what's the most important issue in this election? Well, from the early period to now, economy. That means we need to develop good economy, we need to have a good economy for Taiwan. And that doesn't change for the past two decades. But in academic analysis, well, economic issue sometimes significant, sometimes not. Yeah. So still, there are some other issues, for example, cross-strait issues and also social issues. And you can see that, well, from a historical perspective, the KMT has advantage on cross-strait relations issues, that's for sure. And the KMT has more advantage on economic development issues, but not a social welfare issue. The DPP has tried to focus itself from the beginning on to say that, well, we got to pursue a social welfare society from an early period. So the social welfare issue has quite, well, occupied by the DPP in the beginning. So if you try to see some issue politics in Taiwan, say China issue will be the DPP, and economic issue will be the China issue will be the KMT, economy issue will be also the KMT, but social welfare should be DPP. That's quite stereotype party image in Taiwan. And in 2012, actually you can see, well, that quite be normal picture for this one. But in 16, well, the whole picture changed. Even the economy issue goes to the DPP, and the cross rate continue to be the KMT. And social welfare very strongly in favor of the DPP. And the new issue, actually, I don't see this a real issue or not, because this is new one, which is proposed during the campaign period by the DPP, that we call the sovereignty issue. Okay, and actually, sovereignty issue has come from, well, a different scenario between Taiwan and China's relations, and the DPP tried to use this issue to attack the KMT. Okay, you can see that in 2012, the KMT was quite comfortable in terms of cross-strait economy and sometimes comfortable for social welfare, but not a case in 2016. Only cross-strait relations exist, continue to be the KMT's one. So you can see, this one is a very easy one to tell that, well, there are some changes of people's image on the party's capability or the party's competence to deal with these issues. Okay, and this also partly explains why the KMT was defeated by the DPP. And this one, DPP, how DPP won the election? Okay, you can see that, well, if we try to recognize the KMT continue to have advantage on cross relations, then in this election, actually, the DPP does not suffer from cross relations, because the DPP has quite successfully transferred or neutralized the cross relations, the negative impact on the party. For example, the Tsai Ing-wen, before her running the president, her visit to CSIS, he tried to say that, well, my cross rate policy is status quo, is to maintain a status quo. Actually, this is a very bold move for the DPP, but actually it's quite successful because try to neutralize the negative impact from the KMT, say that, well, it's a political party pro-independence, that could produce some, uneasy between the two sides of Taiwan Strait. But her insistence or her argument on status quo, well, try to pacify some idea about people who are worried about the possible conflict between two sides. And this strategy is also resembled to the case of 2000 when the DPP candidate Chen Shui-bian tried to elaborate a new one they called the New Third Way or New Third Middle Way, 新中间路线. That means, well, even the DPP won the election, DPP will not pursue independence. So actually, it is a similar strategy. And also, similar to the case of Ma Ying-jeou in 2008, when he was running the president, said that, well, no unification, no independence, no use of force between the two sides. That also tried to conceal the KMT's ideology of pro-unification by a more neutral one, status quo. Even though we are not able to define precisely what the meaning of status quo, but actually, they just say so. And I should say that Tsai Ing-wen, she's more capable to interpret her own idea of status quo, say that, well, my status quo is different from Ma Ying-jeou's status quo because we provide two directions of status quo. That means you can either choose independent or either choose unification. Doesn't matter. But in her interpretation, that Ma Ying-jeou's status quo is only one-dimensional. That means two unification. So that would be a little bit, well, skillful in the campaign and try to reduce some tensions or perception of his pro-independence issue. And also try to introduce the pressing social welfare issue and economic issues here. And more importantly, this kind of appeal is attached to the cross-strait issues because when the KMT is campaigning, KMT always says that, well, all the past 8 years, we have a very connection with China and we have a very good economic interaction with China. So we do provide some goods for the Taiwan's economy. And in the eyes of the DPP, they try to transfer that. Well, yes, we are not that denying that kind of economic bonus from mainland China. But the problem right now is that we got to use the bonus adequately. That means to correctly distribute this bonus, not to those business enterprise, but to the people in Taiwan. So you got to deal with the increasing issue of income inequality, low wages, and the unemployment issue, such and such. So that kind of economic bonus from mainland China or close relations was transferred into, well, you are doing good, but not good enough. And we have a more serious problem right now. You got to take care of this. Okay? So, and this one also closely related to the DPP's own issue on social welfare. So that's a quite skillful one. And also quite to create a new issue about sovereignty. And it's to say that, well, actually, if you can remember a little bit, say that, well, before election, there was a Ma Xi meeting or Xi Ma meeting. And that created a new image for that. KMT is good at cross relations, at least good economy and also peace and a stable development between two sides. And this is positive for the KMT, continue to be on cross relations. But the KMT, the DB tried to say that, well, even you have a good relationship with mainland China, but China continued to isolate Taiwan internationally. We are not able to participate in international community, organization, and such, and also your former president candidate, Hong Xiuzhu, she mentioned about the one China same interpretation, which means, well, Ma Ying-jeou's status quo is changing already and create a very deep concern about the, KMT is going to cooperate with mainland China. That could expense of the sale of the Taiwan sovereignty. And also the other issue, we call it the Zhou Ziyu issue, is that she's a pastor in Korea. And when she was interviewed in the Korea interview in the Korea TV, she waves the ROC's flag on the TV. And this kind of action was criticized by China, particularly from the internet of Chinese people. And she was forced to apologize in front of TV and was broadly broadcast in Taiwan. And that was one day before election. And that will also create an image that says that, well, you, when the Ma Ying-jeou still praise that we have a good relation with mainland China, but still we are isolated, we are pressed by mainland China internationally. We are able to speak up Taiwan. So that creates so many issues. But again, I have to say that this issue is related to China, and this sovereign issue is just, well, the first appear in this election, and it expects still to be observed in the future. And this is the status quo here, okay? And this also explains why the Tsai Ing-wen, she wants to maintain status quo, because these two combined together, we call it status quo. That means status quo, maintain the status quo, and decide in the future, at a later day, will status quo forever. And this, the green one is for independent, the red one is for unification. So you can see that, well, status quo continue over the past 3 decades, continue to the majority, and it's more than 56, even 65. So it depends on a different scenario on this one. And that will put every candidate in Taiwan, every candidate, try to locate himself or herself in the center. That means status quo. And that could be also represent a very stable scenario in Taiwan, say that in terms of close relations, there's the only president you can go. And in reality, we can see here, condition for independence or unification. And you can see that, well, this one, very interesting. People in Taiwan, they don't like unification. And relatively, they are more preferred to independence, but they all depends on something. For example, you can see that the condition for unification, the best one should be this one. Both sides practice democracy. That means the two democratic regimes across the strait, then we can try to unify. And the last one, condition for independence, well, military confrontation matters. The concern of this confrontation matters quite a lot. That means if there were no any military confrontation between two sides, why not go for independent? But still, there are some concern about military confrontation, say that, well, try to put this one. So actually, this condition is able to explain why so many status quo are there. So status quo is a rational choice for Taiwanese. Sometimes it is not that ideological. It is not that sentimental. It's a calculation. Which one is best for people right now? And this is the, try to say this one. Okay? And this conditions issue also try to tell us that, well, unification in Taiwan is getting more and more remote to some degree. Yeah, we got to admit this one. But there are some hope to work together. And this one is a little complicated. And this one is interesting because this one, we try to set up some conditions for independence in the world. And this one, we try to set the status quo. The meaning that we just discussed that we have more than 60% status quo. And it's not easy to define the meaning. So we try to say, well, we ask the people that when they say, when they reply their status quo, we continue to ask their second preference. And then there are some people say that, well, my second preference continue to be status quo. And then we try to ask another one. What's your least priority? Well, what's the option you don't like most? And then try to see this one. So this figure trying to provide more detail without any conditions about their real intention about independence or unification. So you can see that from the left side, you can see those people who pro unification is the red one that, well, around close to 20%. That means this one. This one is unification as soon as possible. This one is maintain the status quo and unify later. These two together around. And still, this one is a little bit awkward. I'm not able to define this one, but just the mean. Status quo and anti-independence. Okay? Because we have a least preference option for this one. And on the other side, you can see that this one, independent as soon as possible, and maintenance network and independent later. So around 40%. And this one, maintenance reservoir and anti-unification, 20%. So that's the meaning we're trying to say that, well, if we try to provide a good answer, well, not a good answer, a quick answer about what the people really think in Taiwan about unification issue, I should say that, well, more leaning to independent, less to unification, but not a decisive comparison. Okay? And this is the try to design. And how about the perspective for the new government is that, well, I should say that economic revival is challenging because Taiwan, actually, I should say that if we compare to other survey democracies, Taiwan's democracy is okay. But the problem is that we have a very good record in the past decades of our economy. So we are not satisfied about the current economy issues. Particularly, we are being slow, a little bit sluggish, or very low, the downturn economy here. And also, cross-rating a cold and an economic economy and the diplomacy also, too. That will be difficult for the Taiwanese government. And also, social welfare issue needs tremendous finance. I mean, that's the challenge for Taiwan inside, because we don't have enough finance resources to get this, for example, the aging system, care of the care system for the elder people, and also we don't have enough personnel, trained personnel. It takes time. Yeah. And if Thai's government try to put internal reform as her beacon for governance, then it's not easy, because it really takes time to see the result. And also social justice reform, pension one, and also candidate assets. This one is important, but this one will encounter with strong opposition from the other side. As I mentioned before, that those the pension system is targeting on public servants. And the public servants, they are stronghold of the KMT. So, well, it's an issue of social reform, but easily to be turned into a partisan issues on this one. And also the KMT assets is also a direct one. And I should say that for the social welfare issue is the key element for the Tsai Ing-wen government, but it could be also the potential outbeaten by other parties, not only for the KMT, but also for the NPP, to debate more and a more deeper and more broader social reform. But it's not easy to finish that because we don't have enough climate resources. Okay? And this is the appropriation of Tsai Ing-wen after her inauguration in May. You can see, well, it's decreasing, this one. Satisfying and dissatisfying. So it's a very short honeymoon period for Tsai. And right now, more criticism than praise for the government. And the other important issue, I should say, that this one, confidence, trust. If you trust the government, then, well, maybe quite crisis for the new government, too. And people, they are trust in the beginning, but, well, the trust decreasing. Maybe not as serious as the approval rating. But you can see that the not trust proportion is increased sharply and constantly. So I'm not sure this month's survey, but, well, I don't have any good answer on this one. Yeah. And the final conclusion is that, well, I try to say it's not easy to say that Taiwan is enter a new party realignment dominated by DPP. It really takes time. And also, there are some fundamental cleavage, for example, the partisan difference and self-identity and the unification issue continue to be important in Taiwan. And resources for Tsai, it is not easy to get. And also, for the new party, I forget to say, the new party actually is a political party closely affiliated to the DPP, but because they have a very overlapping social base. That means those young generation, those professional, they are also support for the new party. New power party, NPP. And that could create different issues. Say that, well, The DPP and the NPP, they are allies, but sometimes they will compete against each other. And that could be also create a difficulty for the new PP to develop further, because it's not easy to compete against the major party under current electoral system. So that would be a difficult for it. And the last one is that, well, personally, I would say that the Beijing government is overcautious toward Taiwan's status quo, because when Taiwan says that we are going to maintain status quo, that means, well, we are not going to do anything to do unification or independence, which could be relatively good for the Beijing government. Okay, this is a personal idea here. Okay, that's all I'm trying to say. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Chen Shen, for that really in-depth and revealing presentation. I think I agree with your basic conclusion that it's too early to tell about whether this reflects a basic change or not. But I think you've given us a lot of suggestions about what we should look for in the future. So I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to defer in order to give people in the audience the best chance to answer questions. And we have a little bit of time. So if you want to ask a question, wait for the mic and identify yourself and go ahead and pose your question. So who wants to go first? Dan.
Hi, William Morin with Applied Materials. No worries. I know the numbers aren't out yet, but I'm just curious to how you think the approval ratings will look following the phone call.
Okay, I think it will be good for Taiwan, that's for sure, because Taiwan in the past 3 months are quite frustrated. Since the, say, WHO, ICAO, and also lots of the issues, events in international community, we are suffering quite a lot. So people are frustrated. But when we have the phone call issue last week, and I read the newspaper in Taiwan, actually, even the KMT does support the kind of phone call. Yeah, and the reason is that, well, they are not there to oppose that phone call, even though they have some concern. Yeah, so that's the momentum in Taiwan right now. I don't say it's rational or irrational, but it's just there. And the problem for Taiwan is that, ever since Tsai's inauguration, the Beijing government has been very harsh to this new government. That could create a different scenario in Taiwan. That means, the government is not that friendly to our new government, then we should support the government more, particularly in terms of cross-strait relation issues. So the appropriating is done, that could be caused the reform inside, the social reform, and also some frustration from outside. And the phone call could be some kind of stimulus for Taiwan, say that, at least we got some support. We got some support from the U.S., and from the U.S. is support our new government. That could be some kind of scenario. So I didn't see any poll about this issue, but I anticipate that could be a little bit increasing or more, how to say that, encouraging for the government. Yeah.
So Alan Romberg.
Thank you. Thank you for your remarks. Alan Romberg, Stimson Center. Just one comment on your last answer. I wonder if not the phone call, but the aftermath of the phone call has changed opinion. My sense is that the government in Taipei has been somewhat reticent to be too far forward on this, and the notion of being a traded object has caused, it seems to me, some reaction, and not just by the government, but also by media and others. I wonder, you can comment on that, but my other question was, on your very complicated chart with all the colors and so on, the only two that I noticed, I couldn't read it terribly well, of anti-unification were very small numbers. And yet polls in the past have shown very, very large numbers of people who are against unification. Should I repeat that, or were you distracted, or did you get the point?
Okay. Yeah, that one should be...
I was just surprised at the very small numbers of anti-unification that appeared on that chart.
In this one?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't say the trick, but we try to dig a little bit more about how people think, particularly those people who prefer two status quo in the beginning. Okay. And we try to say that, well, it's a third round survey interview. And you can see that this is first one. That one, the first one in the top table, the first one is a regular distribution. You put, say, MSQLD, that means maintenance status quo and decide later, it's around 32%, right? And maintenance status quo forever, MSQF, 24%. This is a regular one, and quite similar to our survey, every survey in Taiwan. And then we try to dissect these two categories into more precise information. We ask these two categories, say that, well, what's your second preference? In addition, your first preference should be statistical, right? We ask the second preference. Then you can see that the left side says that, well, those people who prefer statistical and the decidator, they are distributed into maintenance unification as possible, only 20%, and then maintenance forever, 40%. And then independence as soon as possible, 24%. But these are all from the 32.3%. And a similar tactic to the other side, maintenance quo forever, and this one. And still, you can see that those gray one, maintenance quo forever, and maintenance quo decide later. We try to ask these two people, what's your least preference? Okay? What's your least preference in terms of invocation or independence? And these two categories into the first one, for example, that. Invocation as possible or maintenance quo invocation later, 62.9. And still, there are some independence as possible or maintenance quo invocation, 37%. Okay? Similar question also go to the right side here. And then you combine all the numbers together to the last here. Okay? And you can have a red one, invocation, and a green one, independence. And still some gray area, they don't like unification or independence at all. So they don't have a good answer on this one.
Alan, if you take the first row and just add up the ones that are something other than independence, it's like 94%. So that's consistent with what you would get if you just ask the question, are you for or against independence?
And this survey was conducted in 2013. Oh. So 3 years ago, not right now.
Are you going to do it again?
It costs a lot of money.
No,
so.
I'm sure.
Anyway, it's a good experience to say that way. We try to test that. Because in Taiwan, we also try to do some qualitative one. That means we interview people. What do you mean by saying you maintain the status quo? And what's your definition of status quo? And I would say that I didn't put it here, but our data says that, well, the status quo means here, right now, a democratic system, a market economy, and the people are free to go everywhere. That's democracy. Mm. So if you want to unify or independence, you should not away from this point. That means if you want to unify mainland China, we got to a democratic one. If you want to be independent, we got to safeguard our democracy. Now that's the principle for right now. Yeah.
Okay, another question. Woman right behind Alan. And then we'll go to the back right. Back.
I was wondering about the role of Japan, how the deep... Japan, could you say something about Japan?
Okay. Japan is the, how to say that, the most favorite country for the young generation in Taiwan. But it will be changed right now, Korea. Okay? And we do have some interesting survey. For example, that, well, in case there is an international baseball game, baseball is popular in Taiwan, and there's two teams competing, Taiwan and Japan, which one do you cheer for? Taiwan, for sure. And the interesting, Japan and China, we cheer for Japan. And Korea and China, we cheer for Korea. So to some degree that Japan is a good neighbor for majority of Taiwanese. So you can see that what, not only tourists, but also the Fukushima earthquake, tsunami in 2011, around that period,
yeah.
That Taiwan donated lots of money, could be the highest donation of World War to Japan. So you can see we have a very close and affection to Japan. Yeah. So I don't say any difference from myself, but I would say that in Japan has a good image for Taiwan, even though right now we have some harsh discussion about the nuclear content food import to Taiwan. So that would be a little bit sensitive. Maybe we got to explore a little more after this event and try to see how people think about that. But basically, I have to say that the Japanese food and also Japanese drama is popular in Taiwan.
So there's a question in the back there.
Thank you. I'm Ken Scalvey from CSIS. Thank you for Professor Yu, your remarks. And I have one question about I want to follow the chart of the survey result. And so which categories the people, young people who have so-called natural independence. Are they categorized to the maintained status quo or the deep green categories?
Okay, basically, young generation leaning to green. Okay, that's the first picture. And if you go deeper about, say, that the natural independent, actually, this term has been ambiguous and some distortion right now in Taiwan. I would prefer to say that it's naturally self-identity as Taiwanese. Not that close to or not that related to independence or invocation issue. Because we ask people, the young population, how they feel about themselves and how they feel returned about natural independence. Their idea is that, well, their interpretation is that I was born in Taiwan, I grew up in Taiwan. Taiwan is the only country I recognize. So not that closely related to China, but a strong identification to Taiwan. And this self-identification can, well, expand to national identification, that's for sure. But there are some finite difference between the two. So I would say that natural identification of Taiwanese, that's purely and 100% for the young generation in Taiwan. And in terms of their political choice in the future, well, that's another issue. And from the survey, I would say that this young generation, they are leaning to DPP, so they are more likely to support for independence. But not that 100% responding to the partisan attachment.
Yeah,
Dave Brown from SAIS. Thank you very much for your comments. Many of the observers of the Taiwan election, and myself included, found the most interesting phenomena being the emergence of the New Power Party. You almost entirely dismissed them in your approach by saying, one, their support base is essentially the same as the DPP, and the DPP is a powerful party and it will overwhelm them in the future. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about this issue and delve into whether there are, in fact, some differences in the support base and the way the two parties, the DPP and the New Power Party, identified themselves in the campaign. I perceive some differences over cross-strait policy and Taiwan's future. I also see some differences with respect to reforms and who is best able to implement reforms. So I just appreciate your talking a little bit more about the New Power Party.
Okay, thank you for giving me this opportunity because I just to rush on MPP. Actually, MPP is a young party, and that's for sure. So it's a party originated from the Sunflower Movement in 2014. And you can see that those people from college, highly educated, they are the hard supporter for the new PP. That's one thing. And the difference between the MPP and the DPP actually also rests on young generation. We can have some ideas that, well, from the opinion survey, we can find that, well, younger generation, they are split between MPP and the DPP. And you can see that some portion of the young generation, they are more leaning to the MPP. The problem is that, well, this young generation, they don't vote regularly. They may voice out, but they have less action in election day. That's the problem for MPP. The second one is that MPP tried to differentiate itself from the DPP in terms of certain issues, but not in cross rate. In terms of the social welfare issue, social justice issue, for example, it focused quite a lot of effort on, say, the working hour debate right now in Taiwan, labor's working hour, and it's more radical than the DPP. Try to address to those laborers. And does it succeed? I'm not sure, because the DPP has overwhelming majority in the legislative yuan. So the regulation will pass according to the DPP's idea. So the battlefield is not in the legislative yuan, but on the street. So the new PP will try to define itself as a socialist or a right-wing political party. Here, right-wing means not a communist right-wing, but by stating their interest to the laborers, social workers, such and such. So they try to differentiate themselves from the DPP by this way. But in Taiwan, in election, you got to mobilize the laborers. You got to mobilize the students to cast their body. But it's difficult to do that because the party, the DPP and the KMT, has quite highly penetrated into the workers' groups. So that's difficult for the DPP to, for the MPP to compete against the DPP. But still, there are lots of opportunities for the new party, for the new MPP, because the DPP is the governing party, and it always suffers quite a lot of criticism. And the MPP is very good at propaganda to voice out. So how can the MPP try to attract more people in the second round, after the election, and prepare for the 2018? This is what they try to do, because they have already begun to nominate their candidates in the 2018. And they try to find some highly educated, very persuasive candidate for themselves. So that could be a threat for the DPP. But they will begin their strategy in local elections. That means 2018. And 2018, the local election is easier for the new part, for the MPP to survive, because the local election, particularly for the election for the county councilors or representatives, they use multi-member plurality system, not single-member district. So it's easier for the MPP candidate to get elected in the election and could expand gradually their power. But it really takes time in elections.
Dave, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you. I think one of my contact lenses fell out, and so middle distance is a big blur. So that's Dan back there.
I'm Dan Beers with the State Department, and I have a question about the other party, the KMT. And I'm curious about what you think the prospect is for the KMT to become competitive again, and particularly whether it has a new generation of leaders to do so. And in that regard, two specific questions. If disaffection with the Thai administration grows, is the KMT in a position to take advantage of it? And if the KMT doesn't become competitive, what are the longer-term implications for cross-strait relations?
This is a one-million question, actually. We discuss it quite a lot in Taiwan. And so far, we are not that optimistic about KMT, frankly speaking. In terms of the leadership issue, in terms of the social structure issue, in terms of the organizational issues, well, it's not good. For example, right now, the KMT leadership, Hong Xiuzhu, she was not fully supported by the KMT member. And she tried to design a very, very unconventional KMT strategy toward mainland China. Too close, which will create some uneasiness for the people, particularly for the people inside from the local Taiwanese in the KMT. And that's create a tension between the two sides. So in terms of the leadership issues, that's the concern here. In terms of organizational issues, I should say that, well, the DPP tried to, well, pursue the issue about KMT's illegal asset, and that would destroy the grassroots of the KMT. And KMT is a property penetrated in Taiwan society for quite a long time, but the penetration needs lots of resources to allocate. And when the KMT's asset was, well, too transparent or too limited, that would create difficulties for the KMT to do that. And also, on the other hand, the DPP tries very hard to undermine the KMT grassroots. You can see that the DPP from the south to central and then to the north, that means those local elite, even though they are not DPP affiliates, but they help DPP in the elections. So that's the question for the KMT. And also, for the organization issue is that, well, KMT run is downsizing. And the downsizing, I don't see any clear picture for the KMT to go. They just, well, laid off the people, but they don't know what's next. But still there's some hope. Actually, we do have to be fair. Some hope is that, well, KMT really has more experience than the DPP in terms of cross-strait relations issues. But unfortunately, I don't see clear picture right now say that how the KMT can take this advantage for themselves. That's my concern. But really, the KMT did have some issues, have some advantage on the cultural issues. And also, regularly or conventionally, KMT is good on economy. But right now, I didn't see any clear picture for this one. They didn't propose any alternative against Tsai's idea about the economic issue or social welfare issue. No, they didn't do that. Yeah. So it's quite a pity for the KMT. And personally, I would say I am more anticipating for a strong KMT. I mean, I'm more anticipating for a two-party, which is very solid, strong, and competitive. But at this time, the KMT is a little bit weak to some degree. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. Jeanette Jiang from China Times, Taiwan. Just have a very straightforward question. It's about what you just say that according to the survey, actually the unification is getting more and more remote. And I just wonder what the implication would be in the future, not only near future, but long term for the cross-strait relationship. Thank you.
Personally, I would say that from the perspective of the Beijing government, the Beijing got to recognize this truth. democracy is a one way. It's not reversible in Taiwan already. So if you want to unify Taiwan with different political system, that's not possible. So that's the people thinking. Taiwan says that, well, we are not able to unify with mainland China right now because it's not a democratic one. In the future, for the Beijing government, the good way is that, well, at least status quo is good. That means if all the political party or the leaders of the political party, they advocate status quo, which is not the worst for the Beijing government. That means, well, at least they are not going independent in the future. They try to maintain the status quo. That means the options stay there. That's one thing. The other issue is that for Taiwan, actually, unification is getting remote and remote. But I should say that if you try to track the people's affection to mainland China, well, we don't have any likeness to China. That's for sure. But I don't say we have excluded out the possibility, says, well, the future cooperation. Because it really depends. In terms of the cross-relation issues, is a more rational one. People got to think about which one is most advantageous for Taiwan. So, well, when mainland China is more friendly to Taiwan internationally and also politically, that could be an opportunity for talk about unification. Without this kind of the friendliness for Taiwan, it's not easy for Taiwanese people to say that, well, we want to unify, we want to say something to mainland China. No, no way. That's the problem, because Taiwanese people, they just calculating, they're just thinking, and sometimes they are waiting. And my only concern could be how patient we are. But this is a difficult answer, right? But anyway, I have no answer right now, that how patient we are to maintain status quo. But still, when you have a survey, people say that, don't do anything. Just stay where we are. That's it is. And it's quite stable. So I don't need to worry about that. Maybe, well, my students, they got to worry about this one. Yeah.
If I could add a comment, I think the low level of support for unification is at least partly a function of the PRC's formula for unification. One country, two systems has never been popular in Taiwan. Never. And it's never going to be. It's been around for 35 years. Maybe if there were some significant change in the formula, then maybe people might have a different attitude towards unification. Then there are the issues of what kind of system the PRC is. But there is the sort of PRC offer that's an important factor here.
Actually, there was one talk around the early 90s about some kind of formula like the EU. Mm-hmm. That means Taiwan has its own sovereignty status, mm-hmm. but very close with China. But this idea was ruled out immediately by not only by the Beijing government, but also by the KMT government too. So,
Lianzhong tried a similar thing in 2001, and that didn't last very long.
Yeah. So, Richard is right, that it depends on the formula that the Beijing government tried to propose. Yeah.
One more question, the woman right behind you. Right there. Yes,
hi.
You.
Yeah. Hi, Chia Ching from United Daily News. I have a question about the election in 2020. There's a rumor or a discussion right after Trump's victory that people actually wish the famous businessman Terry Kuo, yes, can run for 2020. And the other possible candidate is the mayor of Taipei. And both of them are nonpartisan. So do you think there's a possibility to see a different picture in 2020, that there's more than KMT and DPP? And how do you see the competition?
Okay. If Terry Kuo is going to run, he should run for the KMT, right? Mm-hmm. Nonpartisan?
Yeah.
Because there are two scenarios. Guo runs as an independent or runs as a KMT candidate. And certainly, the KMT is not that denying the possibility. But I doubt because KMT has lots of people, they try to run on themselves. So unless there's really a momentum to say that we got to win, regardless what cost, that means regardless, he is not our people. We just want to kick off the DPP. That's possible, but I doubt it's not that easy. And
that sounds familiar. Where have I seen that before?
That Taiwan and U.S. is different. Okay. Yeah. And about the Taipei Mayor Cohen, right? And frankly speaking, I am a little bit worried about his second term, let alone his presidency in 2020. Yeah. So the reason for myself is that, well, in Taiwan, if you don't have a party base, it's not easy to win presidential election. You have a James Song as an independent at that time. It's not easy. Unless there is some internal spirit from major political party, then the third candidate has some opportunity. Without the spirit of the major party, then the third party candidate is not easy to win the election.
Okay. We've run out of time. Thank you very much for a great presentation. Thank you all for your questions. This is a story that will continue, so stay tuned. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.